Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 203, featuring Virginie Bourdin, who is an amazing art director, concept artist, and person who's worked on many, many feature films. She was at MPC for a long time, and she started her own company called The Art of Direction. And she's actually working on Captain Marvel, which I'm very excited to know about. But she just worked on numerous films as a creative director and an art director and concept artist, things like Godzilla, X-Men, Days of Future Past, Harry Potter, a bunch of Harry Potters, Wrath of Titan, Edge of Tomorrow. Really, really great work. I got to sit down with her in Malta. This is another one of my Malta THU episodes that I did when I was there. I still have a few left, believe it or not. I did record, I think, about 7 of them, maybe more. So it was really great to be able to hang out with her. I got to, be with her the whole week and sort of chat about all the amazing work that she's doing. And really inspiring to see where she came from, how she ended up doing what she's doing. And she's clearly a very, very ambitious person. And I'm really very impressed with how she's been able to do all this amazing work that she does. I don't really have a huge amount of announcements right now in terms of specific things that are going on for Chaos Group in terms of our software. We are coming towards the end of the year, so things are wrapping down. But there is actually going to be a few exciting announcements next week. So keep an eye out on our website, chaosgroup.com, and check out some of the announcements that are coming next week. I'm sure there's going to be a few last end-of-the-year surprises for some people that want some new stuff out there. But there is a few other things I wanted to mention. Is there was a competition that we put out, a student competition that was really great, and it's called, the name of the competition was the What's Next competition, Your Vision of the Future. And it was a student rendering challenge. And we'd like to congratulate Jack Pagan of Noman, who won the jury prize. So congratulations to Jack. And the public prize winner was Isaac Zurin from Mexico. So really excited to have those guys participate. And thanks so much for all the amazing entries that we had. It was really a lot of fun to be able to do this competition. All right, hopefully you guys will enjoy this fantastic episode of the CG Garage with my very wonderful guest, Virginie Bourdin. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
It's actually been a challenge at THU in general, because right now, compared to Troia, everyone is close, but they're a little bit spread out.
Yeah, they have three venues that are a bit different.
Three venues and then lots of hotels.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'm on the cool one. There's plenty of artists.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm with Nadezda Kuzmina, Jeremy Mann, Phil Hale. I just discovered Phil Hale. We have a passionate discussion together. I love the way he thinks. And there's also Carla Ortiz and a bunch of art directors from Disney.
Really?
Yeah. So no, the it's great for wine after and a morning breakfast. Morning is brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, which hotel is it?
The St. John's.
St. John's. Oh, okay.
They treat us well.
They treat you well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm at Palais Le Brun.
Ooh, that sounds so French.
It like sounds so French.
Oh, the way you say it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very nice. It's actually on the quieter side of town. I'm with, I've got Ed Hook with me, and Alex Alvarez is there, Paul Lebevec.
Ooh. Yeah. I met this person like...
Ooh, Paul?
Yeah, because this tall, elegant man comes and with a big smile, and we just chat, and I don't know who he is, so it's all informal and great. Yeah. And the next day I realized, this was Paul Lebevec. I've heard about this guy like all my life.
Yeah.
And wow, how I thought he would have like white hair, being way older.
He's my age.
Oh, you don't still have white hair?
Well, no.
A bit on the beard.
A little bit on the beard, yeah. He has white on his beard too, actually.
That's true.
It's true.
No, he's like incredibly, I don't know, easy to approach.
Oh yeah, very approachable. That's what I like about Paul, is he's very approachable. And I actually invited Paul to come to THU, so I was one of the people who did that.
Ah,
and
you're the one.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I nickname him the Michael Jordan of CG lighting.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know how, because he's tall and can jump.
It's because the stuff that he did for image-based lighting.
It's changed everyone's life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I heard about him through friends. I make friends with the people who are creating pipelines for companies and like DJ Mionza, for example. Mm-hmm. And they all know each other. They all kind of like, I mean, Paul has been, I think, very helpful for many of these.
Absolutely.
And they have implemented his knowledge into the companies.
Yeah.
So I only heard about good things about this guy.
No, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy. I like Paul a lot. And it was funny because he got so excited about going when we went on our boat trip, and he was like, I get to go swimming, because he loves swimming. And it was just funny. It was just about like just a week ago that he went on a 3-hour swim. From those who live in LA will know that he went from the Santa Monica Pier to the Marina Del Rey Pier, which is a long distance, and he swam the whole way, which is pretty impressive. But
he's serious.
Yeah, he's serious. He's fun. I like Paul a lot. He's really good.
Well, here is, you have to avoid the jellyfish. So
the jellyfish are fine. The brown ones, the big brown ones, they don't sting.
Yeah,
I picked them up. I was showing Paul.
No way.
Yes.
You've done that.
Yeah, I was I was showing Paul. It's like, look, picking up the jellyfish. Like, what are you doing?
What is the texture of jellyfish?
It's disgusting.
Because we use it sometimes as reference, you know that.
Yeah. Oh.
So
it's heavier than, they're heavier than you think they are, because they're just just got mass to them. They're slimy and gross.
Yeah.
So when I used to live in Greece, and so I used to pick, when we were kids, we used to pick them up and throw them at each other.
I've been nasty as well. I was okay. North of France, Bredune, terrible beach. But they would sometimes have jellyfish coming on the shore.
Yes.
I don't know if it's to die or whatsoever. Yeah. But me and my brother, we would have little tools.
Yeah.
And we know that this is dangerous for us, so we would cut them in four. And we would, like, I remember we walk a kind of kilometers between two cities on the beach, and we may have killed more than 100 of
the jellyfish.
But
they were already on the shore. They were going to die.
Oh, okay. So, fine. We basically saved them of the suffering.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, we were nice people.
You euthanized them.
Oh. So I don't feel so bad about myself now.
Don't feel so bad.
So, I don't know how knowing about jellyfish would be interesting for your audience. But.
No, they like that stuff. Don't worry about it. Well, okay, so where were you in France?
I was in the north of France. I come from a middle-aged town called Laon.
Laon?
Very all surrounding by big fields of agriculture fields.
Uh-huh.
Nothing to do.
Yeah.
At the time, you would see just Japanese were the one traveling the world the most.
Yes.
Not the Chinese yet.
Yeah.
And they would come with a touristic bus.
Mm-hmm.
They would, Laon would be on their map.
Interesting.
And they would just come, take photograph of the cathedral and few churches and all the fortification, just for 5 minutes, and carry on their routes.
Right.
So I had a kind of first approach of the rest of the world through this touristic bus full of Japanese.
Really?
And a click, 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 click. Yeah, I've seen that firsthand.
So Laon had a really nice cathedral, I guess. It was a destination.
He actually, like, if we want to make a bit proud of ourselves, that was the first capital of France, long time ago. So we had...
Before Lucette?
before... I think the age 800, and I don't know if it's before or after BC.
Okay.
But we would have that they say over there, the first piece of written parchment of with musical notes.
Interesting.
So I grew up in a kind of historical site, and I feel good amongst old stones, basically.
And you're amongst old stones here in Malta.
I love it. It all looks fake for me because they're all like beautifully conserved. There's no gray color from the pollution.
No.
So it all
the limestone here is incredible. The color is incredible.
It's so you can think that that's fantastic texture reference for my next movie, because if I've got a period movie, I would have the proper reference from the time.
When it's clean.
Yeah, it's but that's it. It's so rare. Usually you would do some texture reference of a portion of a cathedral that they would try to restore, mm-hmm. And then you get these are the clean stones if you want to do a medieval movie.
Yeah.
But here's full around us.
Yeah,
of texture.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It actually is. This is a good note. It is a texture gold mine in Malta
yes,
right now.
And we've been using twice, at least I participated to two movies using it intensively. That was Wrath of the Titan to create the, I'm going to forget the name of that city.
Okay.
Argos or something like that.
Okay.
The city that the Kraken is supposed
to
destroy.
Yeah, yeah.
And Assassin's Creed.
Right.
So now I haven't been during the shoot, but I can recognize. I know that building. I know this one too. So it's a field of play field or game field for me here.
Playground.
Thank you. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah, absolutely. It's really good. But you basically, I want to try to figure out how we can go from you as a young girl living in Lyon.
Yeah, Lyon.
Lyon. Yeah. Not Lyon.
Like a pan. You know the pan?
Yeah.
P-O-A-N.
Yeah.
Lyon, L-O-A-N.
Lyon. Because I just said Lyon, which is a completely different
city. Yeah.
But I want to know how you went from there and then made yourself to where you are now. So how do we get through that journey?
Okay. It's simple. There's nothing in Lyon to do.
Right.
So if you're a youngster, you just want to escape.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
But after a while.
If you don't want to do agriculture,
yeah,
just move on. No, I've been lucky to. I was raised in with parents that were artistic and intellectual.
Yeah.
So they gave me the tools basically to work in that industry. So they were doing advertising. My mom was illustrator, architect of interior. She was, so many artists would visit us,
mm-hmm.
And also. They were separated, so I was keep moving, and I had at 23 years old, I had 23 bedroom. So I think the notion of travel for me, it was embedded, and I was so frustrated because my parents moved only on three juxtaposed departments. Uh-huh. I would call it a department is a region. So basically, I keep moving,
right?
But it was kind of the same landscape.
Right.
Say, come on, I know how to move. I want to see other things now.
Right.
So there was this hunger, mm-hmm. To see something else and the no fear of moving.
Right.
And I went at 14 years old doing art study. We're actually there met at the time.
Uh-huh.
And from that, I just discovered a passion.
So where did you study art?
L'école Lesat, it's a school of applied art.
Oh, okay.
Very well known for its also creative textile. They are really avant-garde in that field.
Yeah.
And they had they were building a new school, so they had all these equipment to do creative video, to do animation, and
really?
I wanted to go in animation. But I wrongly filled the form to enter, so I found myself in applied art after. So applied art makes you discover absolutely everything.
Yes.
You know, you do etching, you do photography, you do. So just for me, waking up, say, oh, I'm going to do photo, and you know, to develop them, and I'm going to draw nature mort. How do we say that? I mean, drawing from
nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, and being in boarding school and away from, you know.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Yeah. It's a pure joy.
So you had a much more general art education.
Total. Yeah. Total. And I fell in love also with art history because of one teacher that explained me this, he explained us that concept. So when you know a bit, you can represent your knowledge like a little circle.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, the circumference of that circle is all the doors to the general knowledge.
Right.
So more you know, more your circle is growing, isn't it?
Right.
So also, more the circumference is growing. So right. Meaning, the feeling is, more you're going to know, less you're going to know.
Right.
Yeah? More you acquire knowledge, more you have an infinite doors opening onto the
yes.
global field of knowledge.
The more you know, the more you realize that you know less.
Well, that's it. That there's so much more to discover.
Right.
And I love that concept. I said, wow, I'm never going to be bored of in my life. Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it made me being interesting by art current that at first I would not like.
Okay.
But I could see then through the prism of the eyes of the artist and his understanding of his geopolitical, historical situation.
Yeah.
And I found those stories fascinating. Yeah. And I started to find interest in everything.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I think, hey, maybe that's why. When you get it opens your mind.
Yeah.
Therefore, you get maybe the habit to try to find an interest in everything.
Okay.
And that's why maybe I'm not an artist anymore, but an art director.
Okay.
Maybe, because I just love to keep finding interest on everything. So whatever comes.
Right. Yeah. Like practicing, like you're almost like coming out of that shell and realizing that, well, this is the other thing I realized, because I've had similar journey in certain cases.
Okay.
And I love practicing and doing the CG that I did.
Yeah.
But I found out that after a while, there are other people that do parts of what I do better than I do.
Total.
So, but there are lots of them, and I've had experience in a little bit of all of it. And I love the fact that I can say, I'm not going to do that anymore. I want you to do that.
Yeah.
And I want to find out like how much more you can do. And I want you to teach me the rest of the journey.
Yeah.
You know?
I totally relate that to that, but maybe from also another part is I think I'm from a legacy of teachers.
Oh, because
from my grandfather was, you know, in a little village you would have three important people in France at the time.
Okay.
You would have the mayor, you would have the priest, and you would have the teacher of the village.
Right.
And my grandfather was that
the teacher.
Yeah.
Right.
And my parents has been, both parents has been at some point teachers. My brother has kind of like, not teaching, but being the coach for roller skating national team.
Uh-huh.
So we kind of all have, maybe it's like, but in conventional
mentorship.
Yeah. I don't know. I prefer coaching, because coaching means. The objective is like the person that is eventually coached, even if like you don't want, but it's in you and you're doing it, you shouldn't think at any time, oh, how Virginie would do it.
Right.
You should think how I still do it.
Right.
But you give it tools and maybe other point of view to unblock him.
Yeah.
I want to join back to what you were saying, because I was relating through teaching
that,
yeah, actually gave for almost more than 18 years little classes, days of classes in animation school in France.
Okay, which school?
Well, I started by LESAT almost as soon as I finished my
master's. Oh, you started teaching there, yeah.
And then I did, you know, for MPC, I also went to Artifex, approaching who are the best talents for next year.
Yeah.
There was Super
Infocom.
That's
a great, Super Infocom, yes.
Yeah. But little, I mean, I haven't done a lot with them, and they also invited me to be a judge at one of their end of the year. But there was like, you know, little journey of little school, and then I think ESAT and Artifex were, you know, more consistent.
Right.
And I loved, and I also did like 1 year and a half full teaching on the private school.
Right.
Which were a killer for wannabe artists who, also, some were like, oh, it's going to be easy, it's going to be cool, it's art, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Or you're just rebelling against our parents. And
right.
So the one who are not serious had a hard time, actually.
Yes.
But it was at private school where, you know, you pay. And we were kind of like asked, and I'm not going to mention that school, but we were asked to not give bad notation because they were paying for it.
That's terrible.
And I was the only teacher who actually did the degree they were given.
Mm-hmm.
And as this is outrageous, sorry, I can't.
Right.
So I would put some 2, 3, like I would be honest to them and they would cry. But eventually I would not then let go and rebuild from that. And some did, you know, a beautiful journey getting their diploma and all that. But then you see them, how they take the tools and advice that you give and go beyond, make it personal. And that I love.
Yeah, I think teaching is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it's almost a, for me. It's also a vocation. Teaching.
But I used to teach at Rice University, and I found out like you actually end up learning more through teaching than people learn sometimes.
Yeah, because we basically have to synthesize in order to say. So
yeah,
we have
exactly.
to make it clear in our head, and so we help each other to go faster in our own understanding.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's really, really good.
But some artists doesn't like to be taught. So even don't dare. They don't want to be coached. They don't. So you have to respect that as well. They just want to express.
Yes. Yeah.
So just only when there's an invitation from an artist to go there, then you do. But otherwise, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So okay, so you've had your degree and you've taught as well. So, but something led you into the film industry. So what was your? How did that end up happening?
Okay.
Did you like? I mean, had you always had a passion for films or?
Yeah, I loved film. I watched at the time a lot, and I did. You know, I also studied in all the old films and all this. So I forgot everything right now, but. I had a passion and also I had a frustration because I was supposed to have done animation. So at least it would have been animation movie, but I was doing advertising.
Oh.
Say, whoa, it's a wrong parkour. I wanted to do film.
Right.
And after many little jobs, in print, I also started, as I was finishing my schools, I was doing the night shift on an animation company, doing backgrounds. So I was starting already.
Oh, doing backgrounds.
Yeah, doing backgrounds. I was finishing my school and I was missing most of the class. And we were doing the night shift from 1 a.m. to 12 noon.
Oh, wow.
And then 1 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Right.
And every 2 weeks we would change and we would work our ass off, basically.
Wow. So you didn't sleep?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was that led me to do my first step into, you know, animation and then movie. I then did a short movie called De La Femme Papillon.
Okay.
Which was, I had the chance to be part of a small group of artists, wannabe director, first-time directors,
Was this a live action or
animation?
Animation.
And we were all revolving around a producer that had a proper impact in the animation world of France called Arnaud de Manque. Mm-hmm. And we all help each other on each other's films.
Right.
So that was also the second steps, and that led me to find myself in Annecy Festival. Mm-hmm. And by waking up too late, going to a presentation for Vanguard Animation,
right,
American company going to set up in London.
Yeah.
And not knowing, not understanding a word of English, just queuing with all the other people, showing my 2D portfolio for 3D movies.
Right.
But my movie was with Butterfly. They were doing birds. I don't know. They find a connection.
They found a connection.
They found a connection. And I was hired as the first batch of people going to London.
Okay.
And
But you didn't speak English.
No. So I can I say it because it's a long time ago now?
Yeah, of
so
course.
You've got that. I had this presentation where I just quote by heart what I learned by heart. I learned by heart to how to present my portfolio.
Yeah.
And now there's a producer who's going to, maybe if he hears that, shit, she shitted me at the time.
Yeah.
But then after I had to get a phone call with the CG supervisor. This is serious business.
Yeah.
And I just, when he rang me, understand a few words here and there, and I say, yes. And 2 months later, I was in London.
So you just said yes to all of his questions?
Well, yes, because I was understanding the word he was saying me, but not the sentences. I don't know what happened to me, why I did that. it was a tough and brilliant experience, and I learned how to lead with the lighters from PDI DreamWorks. So it was everything to gain and to do hard work to make it happen.
Right.
So that's the thing, is animation took me to a feature film of animation, which...
Which one was that?
Valiant,
right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Which, I don't want to say, but for me, I had a hard time with the stereotype.
Okay.
I had a hard time. Your French is little mouse eating cheese, and the beautiness of that production is like we all came together in London from all these countries.
Yes.
And you had the bad German, the Eagles, and actually the German that were the most integrated than any of other country represented. And this is not fair. This as a nation, they have done so much work.
Right.
And they are so open-minded. So, must be difficult to be a German working on a stereotype.
Yeah.
To feed the new generation that will only remind that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was a bit troubled.
Do you feel there's stereotypes about France that are not fair?
I mean,
I'm sure there are. I know there are.
Every country.
Yeah, every country.
Every country. I've now traveled and I don't like stereotype.
Yeah.
But I understand you need stereotype to communicate.
Right.
It's just like, can we not be a diminishing stereotype? Can we use positive stereotype at least?
No, stereotypes are almost, you're right, they're almost always negative, especially when it comes
That's
to people.
It.
Yeah.
Like, can we criticize positively people?
Right.
That would be a good one for me. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, that's it. And then I didn't know about VFX, but it was where it all started.
Mm-hmm.
So like everyone else, I applied to a few companies.
Yeah.
And MPC was one of them. And Adam Valdez was doing a pitch. He needed a creative lighter.
Right.
And I just told him with total ignorant French attitude, I just want to work. I just spent a year in the dark. I don't know how people can not see the sun for a full year. It's cold in winter in London. I just want then, I'm agreeing to do that again, but only for a film that it matters to me.
Okay.
And that was so...
So you're saying that that's a French stereotype?
He should have fired me straight away. But So no, with no stereotype. And
you're saying that French are arrogant people?
Oh my God, I was so...
No.
But you know what? He hired me. I don't know.
Well, your talent is obviously clear. Yeah.
Well, I think I was at the right time with the right experience for him. And I was not, you know, I was not known. So I would have been cheap. I don't know. It's like, but yeah, I was, I think, one of the element of the puzzle he needed, because at the time he was trying to develop also MPC.
Yeah.
He came from the success of being the supervisor of Gollum. And right. he was on a mission of, like, you know, bringing departmentalization and efficiency, but also bring a creative mind. So he was here doing a lot of experimentation, developing softwares. And that's inspiring.
Yeah.
I was like very somehow excited to be part of his little gang within the company. And it is, yeah, he gave me the opportunity and we did pitch together of animation at the time. So at the end, MPC never did a film of animation.
Right, yeah.
But it got me in.
It got you in.
And
so they hired you because they were going to try to do some animation work?
Yeah.
But you ended up sticking around even though they didn't do it.
I ended up being at the right time where...
So how long ago was this?
I think I started in 2003 with Valiant.
Yeah.
It must have took around a year. And then I was straight away going to this pitch for MPC, so around 2004-ish.
Okay.
And then after the other supervisor... Because at the time, it was the because it was not departmentalized, every supervisor has his kind of little village of artists. And if when they finish with a movie, the people are gone.
Yeah.
And all they learn is gone.
Yes.
And yeah, nothing starting, is left.
Start
and it's
over.
Not good for a company.
No.
So, but they knew, I think, what Adam was doing, and they saw that I was doing creative sort of concept. I don't know if they call it like that. But eventually they would, you know, use usually matte painters to do it. And it's Nicolas Tadi who first tried me on.
Right.
And I, there was like, you know, a good brush.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the time, was doing like super fast and furious speed drawing. So that was also in the landscape. And I understood that they needed something fast. So I started to sketch possibilities.
Right.
And they say, oh, this is cool. There's plenty of ideas. And it's,
right.
it's the right way of doing it, not the matte painting.
Matte painting has to be long. Ready for film, right?
Yeah, so matte painters eventually not always have the double hat of being fast.
Right.
And express themselves in sketches, but sometimes, I mean, at the time there was not so much photo montage. They didn't like
right.
it.
Right. Oh, right.
They wanted to paint, but they already, you know, took that seriously as a form of art.
Yes.
And here we wanted to do something fast.
Right.
Many options.
Yeah, sketch.
Yeah.
Sketch.
So that's it. I think I delivered and I was there at the right time and it kind of worked. And from that, I say, well, you need that position.
Right.
I say, yeah. So there would.
So it's almost like you could, you know, like we were talking before, you sketch. It's like, here, you finished the rest.
I don't know. It's like, it's basically already, concept as the purpose.
Right.
At the time, before, I mean, take apart the pitch, the way I saw it is we are here to support the creative conversation with the VFX supervisor, either for his team, either for his client, the VFX supervisor of the film, or the director. So it's a tool of communication. And I come from advertising.
Right.
So I totally understand the semantic. I totally understand the style, how to create any style you want, and then it's a game for me.
Right.
I don't see I need to express myself. Right. I don't see myself as an artist. I've got a skill set.
Do you think there's something also about? I've had this conversation with several people. There's something about craft.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a craft. Is going to the matte painter example.
Yeah.
Like craft is like, this is crafted, you know, like you make meticulous work and you're that becomes a beautiful piece of work, right? But then based on the way you seem to be talking about the way that you were sketching fast, my creative education comes from architecture, so I have a master's in architecture, right? And I had this conversation with one of my old supervisors who talks about how he wants to make sure that everyone appreciates their craftsmanship, right? To like be proud of the thing that you put down.
Yeah.
But for me, I told him, it was like, my architecture education was nothing's precious.
Yeah.
And you, if draw it, if it doesn't work, throw it away. Yeah. Do another one.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that you can relate to in that situation?
Total. Yeah. I do respect and I want to work with people who love their craft.
Yes.
I want them to perform at and loving what they do and feel proud of that. But I think my craft is ideas.
Right. So it's, if the idea doesn't work, you can throw it away and start
total.
Over it. Yeah.
I'm not precious at all. But I need to be proud of as what we did as a team.
Yeah.
As a certain standard of execution.
So the process is precious.
The process is totally precious.
Right.
But still, we are, from a vendor point of view, we are selling, we are a flag for the company.
Right.
So we still need to execute to a high level. And it's totally different than now I'm working for production designer.
Right.
Because if you have got the trust there, you just do a doodle on the table. And that's the idea, yeah, and you go for it.
Right.
There's no need to show off.
Right.
Yeah, so what actually happened, I started doing speed things, but actually what I did was not that because I was also able to do illustration.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like started to make beautiful illustration too.
Right.
For MPC. And very realistic.
Right.
And that also differentiates from the concept artist from the production side. We're also very fast.
Right.
And would not have eventually the need to educate themselves in fluid dynamics.
Right.
And you don't do fluid dynamics drawing. You use photograph elements.
Right.
You know, you need to really get do a proper study that the VFX artist will understand, yeah, that is correctly animated. I can see how I'm going to push that now.
Yes.
So I end up actually, even if we are doing like fast ideas and, and the fastest was mood panel. So okay. We kind of installed that, like this is an art to do mood panels.
Okay.
For discussion between I call them the decision makers,
right?
The four people that are making the movie,
yeah.
And everyone is like feeding them of ideas and gorgeousness. What I wanted to say.
Mood panels.
So that is the fastest way to convey ideas and to basically
because the mood panel. The mood panel is not something that necessarily you're sketching. A mood panel is just reference ideas.
It's an order of ideas. It's like how you're going to order your creative conversation and ask the right questions.
Right.
So everybody knows that if you ask the right question, you have the right answers. After.
Right.
So it's an art of asking questions.
Okay.
And then it gives you more time. So you can have to do little sketches and all that. But then after you have got more time to do a realistic image that is going to show or indicate. And it's very important for VFX to do things at that time because now we can do almost everything. Come on.
Sure.
Yeah. But at the time, do a concept with monsters and folds and the VFX supervisor is going, I'm not trying that.
Right.
This, with subscattering and all, I'm not trying that.
Yeah.
So we had actually meetings as well with certain supervisors to make sure that what we are doing
is possible.
It's possible. You're not wanting to shoot in the feet of your company, of your team. So, so also is a piece of contract between the vendors.
Yes.
And the production. So it's important. It allows to do a better bidding. It allows to inform how and give ideas to the VFX supervisor how he's going to execute that.
Yeah.
And how he's going to push it and how he's going to make it alive. And he also have him a space to make us push the details as he wants. So he can really sculpt his vision through our work because it's precise enough.
Right.
You want sketching things at the beginning when the script is vague enough.
Yes.
Because you don't want eventually that people already fix ideas
locked.
Too fast or
yes.
locked. There's a time to locking idea.
Yeah.
To lock idea. Also, now they never lock idea.
Yeah. Now you're like, maybe it's time to lock it.
It went inverse.
Yeah.
But every drawing and the way you use it has a function at every step of the movie.
Right.
So be conscious of that allows you to enter in the creative dance with the other, with the decision makers.
Right.
And have a real conversation. They can see the ingredient very precisely of what they wanted to see. And
yeah.
you carefully craft
yeah.
the mix.
Yeah.
You know?
yeah. Absolutely. So it's interesting you say that because when I was a visual effects supervisor and I did a lot of stuff. And I did a bunch of commercials, right?
Yeah.
And commercials are usually like a quick idea, right? And what the part I loved the most as a VFX supervisor was the bidding process.
Oh, wow, that's rare.
I know. But I think it's for the same reason that you just described. Because I like the bidding process because that's usually where the ideas, they're not supposed to be, but they tend to be looser than they think they are.
Yeah.
And so just quickly. So a bid would come in.
Yeah.
And they say, we need you to bid on this and tell us how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
Right? And it's usually like ridiculously expensive because
yeah.
they're asking for things that are not possible. Right.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, if you want to do that, it's going to cost a crap load of money. Right.
Yeah.
And so what I would do, and I would say, and I said, that's completely out of their budget. So I would say, let's talk to the director or the agency or whoever was the creative behind this. And I said, I want to help you on this bid, but right now what you're asking for is different. So tell me a little bit more about what you're trying to do here. And they would start to describe things. And then I would say, well, okay, well, that's interesting. But you know what else we could do? We could save a ton of money if we did something like this. And it's oftentimes through that conversation, we would start to do a couple things. One, save them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And two, develop a relationship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's what, for me, the way I see now movie from VFX to now production design side is a miracle.
Yes.
And it all only works because of that relationships between people.
Yes. And so this was also another trick. Is that even though my bid may at the end still be higher than other companies, because they're still bidding
yeah,
to other companies,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
even though my bid may still be higher than certain other companies, I already have a relationship.
Yeah.
So
then the relationship on top of that on creative subject, so it's really exciting.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, well, you know, this guy, yeah, but you know what? He's got some really good ideas. So they end up going with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
it's a really good trick.
That's it.
It's a good, it's a total, you know, that's a secret, but now it's out. But I think you're right that like the process of the loose sketch is so much more can come out of that at that point, and then
yeah.
and then you can take the ownership
yeah.
of it, and then you can make the craft
yeah.
out of it.
Yeah. It's opening your mind of the world of possible and being creating of reinventing the way to get the best result.
Right.
And is highly challenging for our little brains
yeah.
and is exciting.
Yeah. Do you have an example? Is there a specific show or project that you worked on that really sort of illustrates that process to you? That's like, this is a good example of that.
Of like how they save money or how they...
No, not saving money. No. I mean specifically about how you crafted that small idea that was very loose at the beginning. Which was a project...
Loose idea.
Yeah, which was very loose and then suddenly turned into this thing that you came up as a collaborative creative process. What's a good example of that?
Well, I've got plenty of idea, of stories, but... I suppose I need to find one where we do pitching.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to answer exactly that because it's so full of events. Wrath of the Titan?
Yeah, Wrath of the Titan, okay. Let's talk about that one.
Russell's title.
Well, what happened? I mean, you shot Reference in Malta, so that's a good example.
Yeah, that's true. But as a reference, I presented another the story of the mood panel for me is made into the repeat chip story of Narnia. But basically, you start on the first green light on Wrath of the Titan. Mm-hmm. NPC wants to be in the dance, get on that movie, and help the movie bring it into UK. So we participate with other studio to the creative development.
Yeah.
And here you try to get the big villain. And actually, the Wrath of the Titan with Kronos. Mm-hmm. Was the first time I think I've seen on the huge poster a 3D character being as big as an actor.
Right.
So that's, for me, that was a shift that now VFX are taking seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So creating that character, Wrath of the Titan, we started by a lot of mood panels to basically, every time I would have access to directors and VFX supervisors of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And normally you're supposed to work with your VFX supervisor of the company, and only sometime where there's not, you're going to be invited.
Mm-hmm.
But then you don't have I don't have access to all of that. So I need to win minds.
Yes.
From distance.
Okay.
So I'm going to
through an intermediary, right?
Yeah. So I'm using mood panel for that.
Okay.
Asking questions, and the way they're going to answer me, I'm going to answer in about their taste, about the direction they're really wanting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if they don't know perfectly yet,
right?
It's going to give me the boundaries,
right?
Of how risky they want to be or not,
right?
And usually they always want to be more scary and all that, but then, at the end they come back a bit to safe ground. So it's Nick Davis at the time doing it. Big person at the time for Soho.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write another. Now I know.
Okay, tell me.
Age of Tomorrow.
Age of Tomorrow.
The Mimic.
Yeah, oh, right.
Yeah, not because I'm thinking about Nick Davis.
Yeah.
And
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah. And he came to MPC after working with Framestore for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And I think he developed most of the things also with Framestore, our department at the time. But they had a struggle with the Mimic.
Right.
Yeah. And he comes with one reference of an abstract cube exploding in tentacles.
Okay.
And he asks us to find, they can't get away from the human form for the Mimic.
Yes.
And they've been trying for a long time. And we, again, instead of basically doing mood fix of the still picture, some mood panels, we do it with motion.
Motion.
And from that.
How do you pitch motion?
Well, you do little mood board with animated.
That, yeah.
Now on Photoshop, you can do that. It's very easy.
Okay.
I don't know where I'm going with all these stories, and I'm not sure I'm already answering your questions. But basically, he always wanted to do something more abstract.
Yes.
And we always need a face for American audience to connect to for the big villain.
Yeah.
And here was the chance he really wanted to go for it.
It was very weird. Like, if you think about it, like, you never really saw.
No, that was cool and exciting.
I know. But it wasn't like behind camera. It was just too fast.
Yeah, maybe it was too fast.
No,
you're right.
But that's why it hid.
It was scary.
It hid
Then it was good.
You're right. The villain hid in the speed. Right?
Yeah.
So like, whoa!
I mean, he developed the creative of that character with many other departments, Previs and pushing. But I think we help him to crystallize the non-human form.
Right.
And basically, I was working with talented. I was always pushing talents in the asset department of MPC.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy, Tony Angry, and I love to sit with him, and we do kind of like four hands. Sculpts.
Mm-hmm.
And basically after this kind of like conversation through Nick Davis answering our motion mode panel. And we did a few little sketches and things like that, small storyboards. He was inviting us always more for more abstraction.
Right.
And then I kind of like, so with Tony, we did several poses of a sort of spider or a sort of panther without head transforming into a spider in one motion.
Right.
Where the tentacles give, you know, intertwine and,
right.
and give different shapes. And eventually, I, with Tony, thought this in between where it's totally abstract, that looks like a gun, this is our core. This is our
right.
character. Like, I think I did the same character with Raptor the Titan, it was him as well.
Uh-huh.
And when you feel that the character embodied the brief, like,
right.
Wrath of the Titan is needs to be a god, really annoyed, but 50 years old man, and
yeah.
with kind of. I was just telling him, he's got lava. He's made of lava. So imagine you with a bucket of slime on your
yeah.
on your head. So you would have like all the corners would fade out.
Yeah,
and then you know within this model that this is it.
Right.
It's going to gather everyone. Is got the seeds
yep.
and the strengths for the narrative of the story, for the vision of the director,
yep.
and then after it's easy. And it was the same with that gun,
yep.
which was totally abstract. And we did that piece. We actually took some models also of the armor that were made by Framestore, and we did a piece of this jerking abstract guns, like with tentacles and. And that was it. It's kind of like, answered your, I'm not sure.
You did. No,
okay.
I like the fact that you went through that process of trying to figure out how you went from, we have something, but
yeah.
we don't quite know what it is.
Yeah.
And then as opposed to saying, we want a creature that does this. And you,
well, it was the case. He wanted a creature that had this element of surprise.
But what you but
that's why it's
but that element of surprise is not a like,
but by this movement that exploding.
But, right, but you did, but you delivered that
yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, because I trusted his vision.
Right.
I say, okay, he wants that. Let's do for let's well, not but, compromise.
Right.
And let's have fun. So for me, it was more like creating the space
right.
for the artist with me to dare.
Right.
And not stay on safe ground.
Yeah, because safe ground is, let's just make a creature that has been drawn in ZBrush and it looks like every other creature. And you didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah. And so I think it's really, I think that's an excellent example. Now, I want to do one more thing I want to talk to you about. Because you and I were talking about your presentation here at THU, right?
Yeah.
And you had a debate with yourself.
Yeah.
On which way do you want to go with the conversation?
Yeah.
So what are the two ways that you want to go?
Well, it's easy for me to philosophize with Phil Hale about art.
Yes.
But I met people that are for me monuments, like you talk to someone and at some point in the conversation said, oh yeah, I was modeler on Blade Runner. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean the first one.
yeah.
And you're like, oh. And okay, I think these people have went through, also have been witnessing a very important part of the VFX industry growing
mm-hmm.
and how it's institutionalized itself. Actually,
yeah.
I'm part of that. I think they are part of the history and they are the one who should philosophize about it. And that would be for me in 15 years, 20 years.
Okay.
And so I thought I may be more pragmatic and try to give a clear example of what do we do today.
Okay.
To the people here, to the attendees. So I'm going to be more practical on how I do things, how, you know, how I hire people around the world and how we work creatively.
Okay.
Instead of like philosophing about art.
Well, do you think you
I don't know, they said it's like between TEDx and
Burning Man.
And Burning Man. I've done Burning Man. Yeah. And I've done a TEDx actually.
Yeah.
And it was the worst experience of my life.
Why?
Because because you have to say something clever.
Well, you've said plenty of clever
things. No. You have to prep something clever.
But you see.
So you have to see yourself. Am I enough clever here? Well, here, like, as you said, it's going to be fine, visionary. We talk like a conversation. It's not a conversation. You have this weird format on TEDx where it's 20 minutes, not enough to improvise and not short enough to just do bullet points.
Right.
So you have still to develop. So you end up almost learning by heart what you say, which is awful. I hate that. And I remember had blanks. Literally, I don't remember what I'm supposed to say there. And people afterwards saying, oh, you were so posed. It's like you were so comfortable. No, I was scared to death.
Terrified, yeah. I bet.
So TED is more linked to, you know, you give something, and it's also philosophical. It's your vision
right.
of things.
Yeah, I haven't done a TED Talk.
It's scary.
Paul did one.
But he ought to.
And he was telling me about that same thing. It's like you really have to time it. Like, and make it like, and not go too fast. And do, So you feel that you have a lot of practical knowledge you can give people.
Well, I guess, yeah. That I came across, like, this art department that I started at MPC, I went through a lot of transformation. I was very caring about asking the VFX supervisor what they needed. And the needs have evolved.
Right.
So I've got the history of now, what do we need?
Right.
You know, but in respect of what was needed by the past. So I guess I can select what is really worth in the pack of, you know, there's so many softwares you can use. There's so many way of doing creation. There's like now all these concept artists teaching other concept artists there on truth.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, from that, what do you really need?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess I'm going to be more practical about it.
But at some point, you're going to have to give that talk, the other one.
The philosophical one. Yeah. You know what? I'm not yet totally ready. In the TED Talk, I started to do that, where I see relationship like as three dynamics now. And I see creative discussion as fluid dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's like you're in Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, my father has been doing studying on fundamental communication for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that in the background, and I know I would like to formulate it in a way that it's easy for people to comprehend.
Okay.
But there was one book that thought the way I'm thinking is not stupid, because I because of studying fluid dynamics,
mm-hmm.
and I see world through natural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Other people did it way before me, and they wrote a book called The Breaking Point, and they've been advising world company in the world for 30 years.
Yeah.
And they also looked at phenomena in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's more, I mean, if I've got a very specific vision to offer, that would be that. And I need still to, like, a philosophical vision to formulate it better.
Okay.
So you need example, otherwise it's abstract.
So it seems to me that, you know, since your early days, you were very much an observer, right?
I don't know. I talk so much. I don't know. I should be more of an observer.
I think you are definitely an observer in some way. Okay. You're looking at things. Okay. Because every time you describe things, every time you describe things, you describe them like things that you've seen.
Yeah.
So that means you observe those things, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a thing that I think is important. Now, what you're when you provide your mood boards, it's like this, and that's something you've seen.
Yeah.
And when you do you think that you've, is this something that was born naturally from you, or do you feel that you've grown as an observationist or observer in that time? Do you think you
combination of things. First, and why we are so annoying as French people, that everybody is going to be pleased if I talk about that. Every French study on literature course, how do we call that? Is a form of writing about a subject where you have the thesis and the antithesis, and you have to make the synthesis.
Yeah, thesis, antithesis.
Thank you.
and you have to have, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then everyone is trained to have a critical mind.
Yes.
First of all, that's why we are so annoying.
Our fault. You're not so annoying. Go ahead.
So you've got that culture embedded of us as we are too critical and we complain too much. Yeah. I do agree. Right. And then I've got this father who, as almost a marginal, has done research in fundamental communication, mm-hmm. and educating me in a way that is a bit weird.
Okay.
And I've seen my parents were really complementary and opposite. So I think being the in-between makes you analyze things and observe things. And
then you
learn how to position yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we were talking with someone about that, and if you're in between, you eventually are going to highlight conflict or highlight differences because you're in between.
Right.
But it doesn't exist. If you're both ender, mm-hmm. and you cultivate compassion,
yeah,
then you're way better to help people to make a movie.
Okay.
You can see from one point of view, agreeing, but also seeing, hey, that direction, the direction of others, is also good for you.
Right.
So all concept art is crystallizing the vision of several people. So you make them agree on something.
Right.
So basically, I think I've practiced that all my life.
Interesting.
Because my intention is we move ahead, always one step ahead for the movie.
Right.
My intention is to make good movies. So my intention is that everyone somehow should feel their ground. Even if they have disagreements at a certain moment, at some point they need to agree so we can move on and build and
right.
make.
You're not picking sides.
No.
Yeah. No, I get it.
No. There's other people who are really good at picking sides, and I let them, that's their job.
Sure.
My job is not there. I traveled and I found myself in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. About that for picking sides.
So, yeah.
And I found myself, the people who I connected the most were the Palestinian in the street of Jerusalem selling Christian souvenirs who offer you the tea. And I was avoiding them for so long until I needed to buy something for my grandma, mm-hmm. Not knowing at all because I'm far away from that. And wanting desperately to have advice from one of these Palestinians where I was refusing the tea.
Right.
Because I want to see it all. I don't have time.
Right.
And eventually, at last, someone comes. And in 5 minutes, we were talking about peace, where the entire city is always on the verge of fire.
Yeah.
And I found,
thousands of years.
Indeed, but you feel that tension. And, yeah. and I felt, I connect to this man deeply. And I went to teach in Kazakhstan.
Oh, wow.
VFX.
Really?
Well, that's another story. But anyway, it's crazy. And you've got people, like, I didn't know, people say, why are you doing, why? Because it's a culture, I don't know.
Okay.
And I understood that there was other people from the British, so it's a British university over there. Mm-hmm. And there were other people that were also here to bring an alternative and to bring a consensus, mm-hmm. Constancy is not good to make things happening, but you need it. It's like everything is black and white, zero and one.
Yeah.
The world is binary of any kind. So you need some people like me, and you need some people who stick to their ground, express themselves, and go for it the full on. And I respect that other part.
Right.
And we need to be together.
Sure.
You breathe. And you breathe, your heart stop, and your heart move.
Right.
You walk, and you're in unbalance when you're in between steps. And then you're in balance when you're 2 feet on the ground.
Yeah.
That's how I see the world. So
if you stop walking in the middle, you'll fall down.
Indeed. But it's very simple for me.
Yep.
So I don't see no conflict in that.
Right.
At all. So I'm happy to be there and defend that function somehow.
Sure.
And totally embrace the others who are totally something doing different and have their voice.
Yeah.
That's why I don't know if I'm a true artist, but I've got a lot of ideas constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, you're an idea person. No, that's why you do what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I love also doing it.
Good.
I think. Yeah. But we haven't talked about you.
No, people know about me. What they didn't know about you, and we got to talk to you, and I will tell you about me after we finish recording, because we've already been an hour.
Ouch, okay. That was perfect. Fast. That's what you're good. You're good.
Thank you. And it's been wonderful to have you, and we've got plenty more time to hang out here in Troia, and I get to know a lot more about you and yourself, and being self-conscious.
Oh, I'm sure you've got more story than me. Interviewing 200 people is like, it's a journey.
It's a journey. It's been fun. This is what I love to do, though. I love doing this. So I like getting other people's ideas right now.
Hey, fair enough. I get that. Okay. I love working with concept artists for that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you, Virginie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Of course.